Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lunar Crush Live. It's episode, I think, 115. It's not in the notes here, but I think 114. We're on 115. We've got Marshall Hainer, CEO and co-founder of Metallicus, coming on. This is Marshall's third time on the live stream, and I think he's the only one that's been on here three times outside of you and me. So it's a big deal. Super stoked to have him on. He's going to be going through everything that they've been working on. I'm really excited to get in it with him. He's just a wealth of knowledge in the space. He's been around a long time. Reminder, we do not take payments for our live streams. We're bringing on amazing projects and people who are innovating and advancing and dedicating their careers to the crypto space. We've got a couple live streams coming up. Vivid Labs is tomorrow. And we've got Vayner 3, which is, it's Vayner Media's, they've got like NFT. They're kind of like an agency for the next generation of creators and NFTs. Really, really cool stuff. So be sure to tune in for those. You good, John? Having a good day?
Yeah, I'm great.
It's not Scaramucci. So this tells me your hair is safe.
Is it good? He's not going to pick on me with the hair product today.
So amazing. All right, we're gonna have to have him back on and get back at him on that one. So all right, we're gonna roll. Let's roll this intro, and we will get we'll get Marshall up here. Mr. Hainer, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, Joe and John, thanks again for having me back on. It's a pleasure.
Sure. Awesome.
And my hair does not have product in it. It's just wet, but yeah.
Hey,
it's looking good, John.
Though. Yeah, thanks. I like your hair too, Marshall. Very nice.
It's hot out there. I had to take a cool shower to like cool down a little bit, or I'm in this, you know, kind of bubble here, sweating profusely on most of these things.
It's crazy. We've had crazy heat the past couple of weeks. We have a lot of team in Europe, and they're not used to this kind of like 90 plus degree Fahrenheit weather. But I like it. I'm welcoming it. That's why I moved down here to Southern California. So,
love it, man. Yeah, we're gonna definitely have to get together here soon. Appreciate again you coming on. And I had a little like intro here about talking about Metallicus, but I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna let Marshall explain it. So, what is Metallicus?
Thank you. So Metallicus is our company. We're a aspiring global crypto bank, global crypto payments and exchanging platform. And our vision is to build a global crypto bank, like it sounds. You have Citibank. It's everywhere in the world. It's in New York. It's in Los Angeles. It's in Hong Kong. We want to have Metallicus in every country, starting with bank partners and eventually building our own banking institution. And as a company, we also, I guess a good way to maybe describe us is kind of like a Google of crypto. We're building everything that you would need from the consumer and corporate end in terms of finance, banking, payments, DeFi, wallet products, exchange products. We're really kind of going for all of it. But our big key is the banking side and the custody and lending. And that's something that we're really excited to offer. And it's just something that's really, you know, we were talking briefly before we started the show. It's something that's really badly needed in crypto. Are better wallets, better exchanges, self-custody where we don't lose our keys, but also we can feel in control and empower, because that's the whole point of crypto. And that's the vision of Metallicus.
I love that. And you're using the word bank a lot. And it's like when you talk about Coinbase, you talk about Kraken, you're talking about a lot of these. We always talk about exchanges. You know, we say exchanges, but why is the word bank so important?
Yeah, everything comes back to the bank. And, you know, in 2009, when Bitcoin was first starting, you know, flashback even 10 years earlier, 1999, when you had the cypherpunks on the news on mailing groups talking about kind of the origins of Bitcoin, right? Bitcash and, DigiCash and some of the very early implementations of Bitcoin before we had a blockchain. There was a lot of talk of, you know, the banks are going to go away. This anti-state money, which is, you know, part of that cypherpunk movement, it's going to, you know, crush the banks. And when I discovered Bitcoin in 2009, I was so excited because I was obsessed with, I mentioned this on a previous show, BitTorrent, decentralization of the internet, where that goes. And banks are so important because they really are the backbone of our financial system, going all the way back to, you know, the Medici, the original bank system, the original banker, moving cash from one point of the world to the other point of the world. The cool thing about crypto is now we have a better tool than banks have ever had to move cash from one side of the world to the other. And that was kind of the origin of banking. You could be in Venice and you could sail to another part of Europe and be part of a trade triangle or whatever and make some trades and pick up money in another part of the world that you didn't have it before, or get paid and it would arrive back home. Now in 2022, we can have money in our mind. We can send money across borders instantly. In fact, it's so easy that it's tripping up laws around anti-money laundering and Office of Foreign Asset Control, like we saw yesterday with Tornado Cash. There's a lot of issues, right? And so how do we pull this back into the banking system and create a better bank than we've had before? And going back to those early cypherpunk days, the vision was that the bank is going to go away and that it will truly become the people's money. And I believe the reality is more of a blend of two. Banks are going to evolve. And I think I've given this analogy before. We used to go to the store, Blockbuster, and rent a video, and it was a tape, and we'd have to rewind it when we go back, and there's all these rules. And now into the future, we don't do that anymore. We can sit at home, we can stream on our phone. So as technology gets better, regulation has to keep up, and the safety and the user experience has to improve. And so banking is so important because it really is the financial backbone of everything that we do. But how can we get the banking system to integrate crypto and empower us? Because when we look at, you know, some of the errors of the ways of banks of the past, where they've opened accounts in our names without our knowledge, where they've spent the customer money and become insolvent, how is crypto going to do better? And I firmly believe that we can. And I believe that what we saw earlier this year was the beginning of the collapse of the unregulated crypto bank. Companies pretending to be banks, operating as banks, but without the oversight, without the risk controls, and that's what happens, right? So this is so important why we need banks. We want oversight, we want regulation. We don't want regulation to the point of it's so strict that nothing can be innovated, but we also want responsible innovation where, you know, the things we're building are not causing everyone to lose all their money. So banks are very important to save our money, to grow our future family's wealth, our community's wealth. And just because someone told you that banks are going to go away or they can't use crypto, that's a lie. Every bank will be using crypto within 10 years.
That's amazing. I love that. And like, there's so many ways to take that right now. It's like, I want to touch on real quick. Well, you kind of said the word blend, which I love, because it's kind of like, is this now the time where that blend is going to happen more? You know, we've got through the beginning of this year, you know, we've seen some of the things that have happened with like risk controls and capital requirements, and there's no regulation there, which like our banks have now. But I would say, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happened in 2008, 2009 that pushed that forward, and that wasn't there. We did see some failures in some like 100-year-old institutions and banks that were super regulated, right? And that didn't necessarily even leak over. Like right now you see like Loan Depot having a $200 million loss, and they're going to have to lay a bunch of people off. Right. And it's like, cause that's one step removed from the banking system. And those mortgage lenders just go out there and they're like, hey, when times are good, we're going all the way. Right. And then there's nothing there. So how do you find the balance there between, and the blend there between saying, hey, we're going to be on the crypto, we're crypto first, and we're going to be almost like a neobank type feel. And then, but also bring in some of those capital requirements that I think that's kind of what you're referencing.
Yeah. And just to put it out there, you know, regulation isn't a silver bullet, right? You can't say, oh, once everything's regulated, nothing bad will ever happen again. Bank will never fail again. Lender will never fail again. But we can have better oversight, right? We can at least say we won't have another Celsius, right? Or something like that. Or to some extent that will at least happen a lot less, right? Same thing with blockchain. We can't say that blockchain is a silver bullet that's going to solve all of the world's problems, but we're going to solve a lot of problems with it, right? And so how do we avoid the Lehman Brothers? How do we avoid the 2008 financial crisis? Part of that is really a change in ethos in banking, in my opinion. My father was in commercial construction in 2008, was creating buildings and stuff like that. And when the financial collapse happened, it really affected my family and affected him. And I saw how that it changed kind of the entire economy over 10 years ago, and really made us think about lending, banks and lending, and it created new regulation around that. But also, I think that it caused a kind of in the last generation, people are aware that younger people are aware that banks maybe are not going to be your friends, right? All the time. And this is why I think, you know, for example, Celsius made so much traction where they said, you know, unbank yourself. What we didn't really want to do was unbank yourself so hard that I could never get back into my funds, right? which is the kind of the running joke. But I think that part of it is an ethos, right? So it's a changing of the mentality of how we do things and as customers who we put our money with, right? And maybe the old vision of banking is not that anymore. Younger people want access to digital assets, and banks that integrate digital assets are going to work 10 to 20 times harder than every bank that doesn't initially, because they're going to be fought at every turn from trade associations, from groups that represent the old way of doing things that don't want this to happen because it could antiquate companies that can't keep up with the technology. I'm sorry, that's the way that the world works, and it's unfortunate, I guess, for some, but I think it's fortunate for the masses because that's how we evolve as a society as well. So part of this is changing the, you know, who do we bank with, right? Do I want to bank with Wells Fargo anymore? Well, not really, because they say bad things about crypto and they open accounts in people's names. And I guess I might be blacklisted after this stream from Wells Fargo for talking so much trash. But the truth is, that's it. I don't want to bank with Wells Fargo. They suck. They don't like crypto. They, you know, and so I'm not interested. And I would much rather go to a first blockchain bank, or, you know, I'd rather go to a Signature, or Silvergate, or you know, Bank Prov, or Cross River Bank, or any one of these banks that's saying we're pro crypto. I'm going to park my money in MetalPay because I don't have to worry that I'm going to wake up one day and they're going to say, excuse me, Mr. Hainer, do you use cryptocurrency? And it's like, I know my account's getting closed, right? So I'm just going to go to a bank account that's not going to do that. And then also knowing that these banks that became crypto banks, not banks that were banks and got into crypto, although we'll have plenty of that, if you can't beat them, join them kind of vibe going on. What's going to happen is you're going to have companies like Metallicus that are going to start in crypto and become banks, and they're going to go through so much stress and rigor and compliance that was asked above and beyond other normal bank applicants, that we have a different ethos, right? And I love what you said at the beginning of this podcast. we never, you know, charge for anything. We never pay for anything. I love that. That's why I love coming on this podcast, and I love listening to it. And I see all the time people ask me on Twitter, hey, go into this podcast. And I'll just say it. That's a fake podcaster. They've charged for it, whatever. I've gotten into trouble for saying and doing this, but shouldn't we feel the same way about our bank? No, they really believe in us. They're not just going to shill us some BS investment product, mortgage, repackage loans, and cause a financial crisis. They really cut their teeth in crypto, and they believe in transparency. And we want to be able to show how solvent the bank is through smart contract audits and things like that. This is the future. And, you know, this is what people are going to demand. I think that ultimately it comes with a shift in ethos of what people want. And in the same way, the public is getting smarter about crypto, the public is getting smarter about finance and banking as well. So we have to demand that from our banks.
So on that note, at one of the highest levels right now, where, you know, it's all over social right now, talking about BlackRock and their partnership with Coinbase. What do you think's happening there? Because we're seeing like a sea change in attitude from a firm as large as BlackRock, where, you know, it feels like they were forced into having to do this. And I'm curious your thoughts on what you're seeing over there.
Yeah, I don't think it was being forced. I really, you know, so I'm a big crypto believer. I was, you know, giving crypto to my family and friends in 2009, 2010, 2011. I gave a cab driver, I think, like 10 Bitcoin because it was worth like $7. I was like, this is 70 bucks. Someday it's going to be like, it'll be more than this cab we're riding in. He's like, oh, yeah, right. But he was excited, right? I bet you he lost that piece of paper, but it is what it is. At the end of the day, I feel that this is a phenomenon that's happening. Finance is changing. Money is moving at the speed of data, like email. And what's happening is we're creating 10,000 financial experiments in 10 years versus, you know, 10 financial experiments in 100 years or 200 years or 1,000 years, right? So during that time with all these experimentation, you're going to have volatility. You're going to have a lot of extreme up and down. And there's nothing that traders and Wall Street loves more than volatility with liquidity, because that's where you can make money. So crypto has volatility unlike Wall Street and traditional securities markets have ever had. So it makes complete sense that the financial trading centers of the world, New York, London, Hong Kong, et cetera, they're all going to just be jumping into this over the next few years. And the crypto markets, unfortunately or fortunately for us, are going to get a little more boring in the sense they may become less volatile as the liquidity heats up, as traders get in. And they're going to make a lot of money during this period of time with high frequency algo trading and stuff like this, the likes of which traditional crypto traders have never seen. So, you know, Gainsey and all these guys, you know, Lumdar, watch out, guys, because Wall Street is coming and they have bots beyond our bots, beyond anything you've ever seen. And that's just inevitable. And also the digitization of stock and securities and ability to be able to see total issued circulating where we could never have that kind of public insight before. We just kind of have to trust like a Bloomberg report or something like that. Now it can be on a chain. They all know it's coming. So BlackRock, like many large institutional funds, is just getting ahead of it. What's interesting is that BlackRock is, you know, quasi government related agency because they do so much work for the government. So in a way, it's kind of like the U.S. government getting involved in crypto, although maybe I could get in trouble for saying that or somebody would say, hey, don't say that. But BlackRock does manage money on behalf of the government. And so it's really interesting time. You know, when we saw El Salvador get into Bitcoin, it's like, all right, well, that guy's a little crazy, right? But he's cool. He's crazy. But, you know, when are we going to see, you know, a P5 country get in? And I think that was kind of like the very beginning of it. It's not going to be like some big announcement like, hey, I bought 10 Bitcoin today from White House Twitter. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be more like BlackRock quietly doing it on behalf of Washington. And I think that that's really cool. And it shows the not only the vision of decentralization at the public level, but also at the government level. People say, oh, the government hates crypto. That's not true. The government is just trying to understand it, and we as entrepreneurs are just trying to help them understand. It should be.
I got a kind of left field question. Like, do you think that stocks are going to be traded 24/7, like crypto is traded 24/7, like a currency? Like what? Like why is there such like a break? There is no New York Stock Exchange floor right now. It's like it's a production studio. It's like, do you think that those markets are going to start to move that direction too?
God, I hope so. I mean, you know, what is this? What is this? Like the market shuts off on the weekend. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. That's like, you know, we're still operating in like 1930s mentality. Like, oh, we've got to go to the stock market and I've got all these papers under my arm. And, you know, like we don't live like that anymore. The world is 24/7. Data is online 24/7. We work in the crypto industry where I always joke one day equals 10. And it really does feel like that because there's just this, and you guys probably it's one day equals 100 for you guys because you're the fire hose of crypto data, right? So you see everything. So I don't know how you guys don't have like ZZ Top level beards right now, but
these are special AI we've developed. John and I both look like we're 100.
Yeah, right.
What's the meme where it's like, I'm into crypto and I feel great. And he's like really old. I think so. I think that could come. I think that you have agencies like the Securities Exchange Commission that are looking at crypto and they're saying, wow, we really want to have control over this market because traditionally we've had, we have a lot of control over the securities market and they can see that that's coming in. And also you have the CFTC who has control. And this is why in 2020, I drafted the Cryptocurrency Act and got that submitted into Congress. In that bill, it very specifically says crypto commodities, a commodity being like Bitcoin. And I'm not talking corn or old school, you know, gold or grain. I'm talking digital commodities like Bitcoin, like metal, like Ethereum, Proton, Lunar token. I'm talking about, you know, free floating digital assets. The CFTC traditionally regulates futures around assets. And I recently, about 6 months ago, got a chance to speak with someone at the CFTC. And I shared my views with her that they should regulate the spot markets of crypto. And she said, well, that would be very unorthodox. But I knew in that moment, and when I was working on the bill, that we would ultimately have this kind of like swim lanes falling into place. What I didn't 100% expect, but now I kind of saw it about a year ago, was that the SEC and the CFTC would start to duke it out. And on the CFTC's website, they said, you know, this is un-American what the SEC is doing, how they're doing it. Traditionally, we've regulated markets and futures and markets. I think that we really need to get everybody on the same page, and we really need to have clear and concise regulation at the federal level. I always say the unpopular things, but that's my vibe, right? As I say the truth, it can be unpopular. There's going to be people that are going to go, yeah, and I'm going to create more enemies. So, you know, in Washington, most of the lobbyists don't do anything. They don't work for us. They don't represent us. They don't help crypto. They actually work against crypto. And if anything came in that gave clarity, they're going to fight against that because most of their donors are fighting against clarity. They're larger crypto institutions. They don't want clarity. They want a special path for them that no one else can have that's going to give them some sort of monopolistic control over the industry.
And that's a lot of money on legal over the years, and they think that there's some sort of exemption there, and that's their moat because they don't want to compete anymore.
And when I brought the Cryptocurrency Act to Washington, I didn't know anything about lobbying. I had never written a bill. I didn't know anything about anything in DC. And I quickly found out that it's not about who has the best idea. It's about who kind of, you know, goes around and does the round robin and plays the politics games and wins people through favors and all types of BS. That's what I learned, right? And even though my bill was spot on, you had people rejecting it, saying, I reject this because I didn't get to approve it beforehand or redline it or change it. And that's kind of ridiculous, in my opinion. You know, if you don't like it, then don't support it, but don't try to torpedo it or make up lies and stories about, you know, why it's bad because it doesn't fit the agenda. And I think that's why we are where we are today, is because we have financial institutions, large crypto corporations, not to be named, that are actually lobbying in the opposite direction. And so I'm doing everything I can, not as a lobbyist, but just as a good American, whatever happened to that, right? And what's good for our country, right? Go out there and support this industry, because this is a rapidly growing industry. I love crypto, I love America, and I wanna see both shine together. And I don't wanna see this go overseas. And that's what's happened over the past few years. We've watched a lot of large crypto founders, not to be named, play the regulatory arbitrage game and go overseas and find a lot of success that way, because they don't have to deal with the unclear regulations in the US, where in fact, in a lot of places that they operate, regulations are actually even less clear. And I think a lot of, this is the dirty secret, a lot of the larger organizations don't want that clarity. But I'm pushing for it, not only in the US, but in Europe and other countries as well. But obviously I start here in the home base. But that's what we want. We want transparency. We want clarity. And one thing I love about you guys and Lunar Crush is we're like kindred spirits in that. Like, we want transparency. We want no bullshit. And we're not going to settle for less. And I think everybody should be open to saying these things and open to saying, you know, why isn't the SEC giving better guidance? Why can't the CFTC and SEC get along? Congress, will you please make a clear and concise bill? One of the things you'll notice about my bill was only like 4 pages. I don't need a 40 or 90 page bill that has all types of junk in there that they slipped in there. I want to see a Satoshi style 4 to 5 to 10 page paper, maybe less, short and sweet, very good. This is what the agencies do. And if you're an entrepreneur, this is how you start, right? Sorry for the rant, but I get passionate about this stuff.
And it's like the tax code should be much more simplified as well. It could be 4 pages, but so how does one submit a bill? You like land in DC and you run up the steps and you're like, here, take this. Like, how'd you go about that process?
Yeah. So I was, it didn't start as I wanted to write a bill. I had this white paper that I was working on internally, and it was kind of like an, you're maybe familiar with, like, a lot of founders have heard of, like, the Y Combinator safe when they're going to raise money. It's a great template for raising money. I've used it. Many people have used it. It's great to have, like, these kind of open source templates for startups and industry to say, like, okay, there's a good template, right, for the creation of something. And so with the Cryptocurrency Act, it started as a white paper of, you know, these are the different types of assets, stable coins, crypto commodities, stable coins, aka cryptocurrencies. Everybody's calling everything a cryptocurrency. But if we're to get technical, cryptocurrency should be like USDC, metal dollar, Tether, Binance USD, right? It should be cryptocurrencies. And then crypto commodities like Bitcoin, Lunar Token, Proton, Ethereum, Solana, these are free floating assets. They're not pegged to any specific asset. They're pegged to usage, scarcity, utility, trading volumes and liquidity, lots of different factors, right? But they're free floating like gold or like a precious metal or something like that. And then you have crypto securities, unintentional crypto securities and intentional crypto securities, things that wanted to be a commodity. Turns out they were a security because they were centrally controlled. They had common enterprise. They had no utility or decentralization. And then you have other things that could be very intentionally a digital asset security. Like there was a hotel that sold, that did a security token offering. And I believe whatever happened to that, if they ever did it, but it's a little bit early for that because we don't have the guidance on that yet. But there have been attempts at digitizing stock. And I think Coinbase even made a blog post at one point, we want to digitize our stock, put it on a blockchain. We're not quite there yet in terms of the regulatory landscape. So when it came to the bill, it started as this white paper. Here are the different types of assets. Here are the different types of agencies that I believe should regulate them. And also, here's the different types of classification. It helped a lot with when we were writing legal opinions and things like that, when we're talking with lawyers, really helped to have these definitions to share. And so I was going to publish this document. I still think I should, just as like a between startups, save money on lawyers type of document, which is the whole point of it. But a good friend of mine, Eric Finman, who's a self-described political junkie, used to work with us. And he said, hey, I think this could be a bill. Let's turn this into a bill. And I said, how do you do that? And he said, oh, I know how to do it. And so connected me in Washington with some congressmen, congresswomen, and found a sponsor. And their office liked it a lot. Congressman Gozer out of Arizona, who's very independent kind of guy, has some enemies in Washington. So there are people out there say, oh, you know, don't, you know, they have their opinions, but I always respect, you know, people that will listen to me and hear me out. And he introduced the bill, and I got to work with his staff. And basically it started as like the bill was not a bill, it was this white paper. And I had to go on to congress.gov. I had to go into bill.gov, I think, or is it bill.org or bill.gov. And I started looking through all of these other bills, similar type bills. And I'm not a lawyer, just deconstructing the structure and format. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, I have a bill. It wasn't that hard. And before I know it, I'm in Washington walking through, I think it's called the Longworth Building, towards Congress, towards the steps with the little badge on and everything, and handed to Congress, and they stamped it, and your bill is officially accepted. Except for it was the middle of COVID and they didn't vote on anything. So have to go back and redo it again. And also, I didn't know how politics work, and so I didn't get all of these people to sponsor me and get behind me. And that's really a big part of, you know, getting a bill through. To my limited knowledge, is that bipartisan, if you can get it, is blue and red sponsorship on both sides, which really strengthens a bill. But again, I am not an expert by any means. This is what people tell me. But yeah, I want to go back and do it again. And I think that we really do need it. And you can see that now. And the future is going to be really great in the US for crypto. I do believe that. But I think that we're going to have to get really loud as founders. And we're going to have to call out the lobbyists. We're going to have to call out the so-called influencers, the people that are really causing problems. And you can see that, where it's causing confusion, sending misinformation, or trying to lobby in the wrong direction. We need to just stand up and say, that's wrong. You're wrong. We don't believe, the crypto community doesn't believe in that. And just be unapologetic about it, because they're going to resort to every dirty Washington style trick they can with this much smaller group of people because that's how it operates there. It's very dirty. And again, saying the things that people don't like to hear, I probably made an enemy of every crypto lobbyist in Washington, but I know very few good ones, to be honest. So, shout out to Perry Ed Boring. She's cool. But, everybody else, I don't know. What are you guys doing? Because I don't see any bills being passed. That's a problematic when our country's not moving forward, when China is. Why is China moving forward? China is a totalitarian, very scary government. When we're the home of Silicon Valley, we should have the first CBDC. So I'm disappointed about that, but I'm going to keep pushing for it. And people that say, the CBDC, be wary of the CBDC. Well, the way that the government works is we're in control, the American citizens, who we elect, what we want, and we need to speak up that we want CBDC that doesn't have extreme surveillance controls and things like that, and we want CBDC that empowers us as small business and citizens, and we need to make our voice heard. So, CBDC doesn't have to be the scary thing. It can be what we want as the public. I want U.S. dollar CBDC staking to get instant access to treasury bonds through all the major crypto wallets. I demand it. Right? Why not? And I demand no creepy surveillance. And these are my terms for anti-surveillance and laws around anti-surveillance and persecuting people, bank accounts, right? Which already happens today anyways. We can make it more transparent. We can make it better. I think it's a real opportunity for people to play a part in the financial system when they couldn't before.
So Marshall, let's switch topics just a tad here. Congratulations, by the way, on Metal Blockchain. I'd love to talk about that and what problems it solves and what went into it and everything. But maybe let's back up because there's probably quite a few people that maybe aren't familiar with Proton, aren't familiar with Metal or your entire evolving ecosystem. So tell us, I guess, what are the pieces of this ecosystem, and then let's maybe talk about Metal Blockchain a bit.
Yeah. So, and thanks again. This is something that we've been working on for a while quietly. I mentioned it on a few podcasts. I called it the chain of chains. And I think some people picked up on it. And then after we announced it, they go, is that the chain of chains? I said, it is. At Metallicus, we want to make crypto usable, valuable, friendly. We started with the layer one because we wanted to touch on the consumer side. So mentioning Metallicus is kind of like a Google. That's kind of like our Gmail, right? Our G Suite. We want corporations to be able to have access to these tools, but we also want consumers to have good wallets, good cross-chain DeFi without having to worry about smart contract hacks and things like that. Payments without gas fees, decentralized identity. When I first started talking about decentralized identity, people were like, that's unimportant. Looks pretty important now as of yesterday, right? And it's going to save DeFi, decentralized identity. So we got all these pieces into the layer one, but the missing piece was this cross-chain communication. And I'm a big fan of Cosmos ecosystem with IBC inter-blockchain communication. I think it's one of the best models we have so far, but Metallicus solved the problem of wallet security with web authentication. So we use web authentication and Proton. It's the only blockchain I'm aware of that does that, can use the hardware of your mobile phone, of your computer, to actually generate crypto keys from a special chip called the secure element, which actually never exposes the private key. Essentially the same thing as a Trezor and Ledger crypto hardware wallet. So Proton turns your phone into a hardware wallet, and nothing can pull the keys off of it, right? That's really cool. But the next part, besides protecting our own private keys in our wallets, is how do we have this cross-chain communication without having these massive bridge hacks? And it started kind of with, I think, even before the wormhole hack, there was the Axie hack, was like 600 million. There's a wormhole hack, was like 400 million. And they're just going to keep happening and getting bigger and bigger by my predictions until we change the model for which we do cross-chain bridging and communication. So one way to do it is the Proton way, which is the wrapped token way, sort of like WBTC on Ethereum. We have Bitcoin in Ethereum DeFi with wrapped Bitcoin through BitGo and Kyber, right? But that's just a token. It doesn't have the functionality of, say, Bitcoin blockchain. Or if you wrapped Solana on Ethereum, it doesn't have Solana or Proton's functionality or anything like that, right? It's just a representation of that asset's price, trading value, and things like that for DeFi decentralized finance purposes. So the first attempts, and this is kind of like early crypto, like how do we get early crypto wrong? Well, we had no mobile wallets for starters, right? A lot of wrong assumptions. So, with blockchain communication, we said, all right, let's put a smart contract on one side, we'll put a smart contract on the other, and they'll have oracles and they will communicate with each other. And I initially, in the like 2019, when I was first thinking about this, I would joke and call it Web 6, because you'd have two Web 3 protocols, Web 3 plus 3, the original Jack Dorsey joke. I think Jack didn't get it. He's just like five. Web 3 plus Web 3, right? But that's dangerous, because you have these two oracles communicating. What was the original problem that Bitcoin solved? It was the Byzantinian generals consensus problem, which is I have a message. I want to go from A to B, and I'm going to send it through this this unknown territory. And I want to make sure when it goes from A to B that the message arrives exactly as it was intended and it was unaltered. And that was the original Bitcoin solution, right? Is the Byzantinian fault tolerance, as they call it, right? BFT. And so with that vision, it's very similar with cross-chain communication. If I want to send some Bitcoin to Dogecoin, to Proton, to Lunar Token, to Polkadot, if I'm going to do the Web 6, so to speak, it's not really Web 6 anymore, is it? It's Web 6, 9, 12, 15. And as that number gets higher, it's actually n to the nth power of attack surface for vectors for attack. So we actually, every time we add a new blockchain using this method, we actually exponentially raise the risk of attack and threat through these oracles and through this cross-chain communication. So our vision was, let's solve this problem, right? What we really want to start is we want blue chip cryptocurrencies communicating. That's the really big one. I want Bitcoin talking to Dogecoin, talking to Binance Chain, talking to Avalanche. I want all the top 10, top 20 coins talking to each other. That's the first thing. And I think the wrong assumption was to say, okay, for Polkadot or IBC, you know, people are just going to build their own blockchains and they're going to slot in here and be great. And they're going to be new blockchains and they're going to come in right away. Well, I've got a newsflash, right? A lot of the people that are ready to build their own blockchains have funding, they have resources, and they don't want to rent your Paraslot for $3 million, buy a Paraslot for $3 million. They're going to just build their own chain, right? So actually, the reality, I think, is different. And this happens with all startups and all technology. But we made the assumption with Layer 0 initially that people are going to want to build their own chains. And I do believe that's the case. But that's maybe 5-10 years too early. Right now, most people are starting with tokens. They're going to start with a token, smart contract. That's a much easier way to start. And then they can evolve into a sub-chain or their own blockchain or something like that, their own standalone blockchain that has its own smart contracts, its own token ecosystem and methodologies. My vision is that blue chip cryptocurrency should go into these layer zeros. So instead of saying like, I do believe, yeah, people are going to come over, they're going to build blockchains and they want consensus and they don't want to have to play the proof of work mining cartel game. But I also think that Bitcoin, Dogecoin, like every proof of work blockchain that's in the top 20 should be sitting replicated in a layer zero right now. Why does Bitcoin not have smart contracts? You're never going to convince Blockstream and the core team to accept any of your commits, any of these things to do proof of stake, smart contracts. We need to take it into our own hands and take Bitcoin and put it on a layer zero with the same token economics, same system, and give it smart contracts, give it faster finality, and let the larger crypto community decide, do you want 7 transactions per second and slowness, or do you want this super fast chain? At the end of the day, decentralization is not about asking for permission ever. And so to that extent, we built the Metal blockchain with the vision of taking Bitcoin, taking Dogecoin, Litecoin, other proof of work chains, but other blue chip cryptocurrencies and housing them inside of a larger chain. Instead of saying to hack this system, you have to hack one of the oracles or smart contracts across many of these bridges. I'm going to say you have to hack the entire Metal blockchain, right? And that is a much better vision. Taking your attack surface from infinitely expanding to infinitely shrinking, right? Where you can have one point of entry, you can have one gate that you can guard versus so many unknowns that could ripple down and affect every bridge and every Oracle that's connected to it. And Vitalik himself, the Lord of Ethereum, came out and said it the other day, this bridging thing may not be like you guys think. It might be something different. And I believe in a slightly different vision than inter-blockchain. I believe in intra-blockchain. Blockchains existing in layer zero, and it doesn't have to be only new blockchains coming in, although I believe over time that will happen. I believe it's the blue chips that can communicate under one environment, not as wrapped tokens. And that's part of the new vision. And also, I want to give Bitcoin, Dogecoin, Ethereum, these other chains, web authentication signing, because Ethereum Foundation is probably never going to accept my EIP for web auth and any sort of reasonable time frame, even if they think it's super cool. There's just such a huge backlog. So, you know, I'm a big believer in, asking for forgiveness later and just doing it as long as it's within the rule of law and responsible innovation, do it. Break the systems. That's cool. And we should be doing that. And that's what crypto is all about. So metal blockchain layer zero, let's have all the chains, top chains communicate, and they don't have to be on their original chain state. We can move away from proof of work. I don't believe in proof of work anymore. Only if it's used in a very light footprint for hybrid proof of work, proof of stake, like Decred, I don't believe in pure proof of work anymore. I think a lot of people are going to hate on me for that too.
So we've actually been talking a lot over here about this kind of next generation, whether it's this layer two versus this kind of, I think originally, like, we can probably give a little bit of a credit to the Cosmos ecosystem with internet or blockchains, right? And so, and now you've got things like Polygon, Supernets, you've got Binance application sidechain. I think with Avalanche, is it called C-Chain, right? So it's like you've got what we're calling freestanding blockchains, not layer ones, right? So it's like when you launch a freestanding blockchain, it's much different than saying it's, and it's, even though maybe it's, there's some similarities around how that blockchain is operating and what the consensus is there, the application is much different, right? So it's horizontally scaling the industry versus saying, hey, everything's going to kind of move to this one thing. So can you, like, and for people that don't know, like launching like on a Polygon, like Supernets is basically saying, hey, we're going to use this consensus, but we can spin up our own nodes. Maybe you do go back to the kind of home blockchain a little bit to find some security there and have a couple of nodes there, but then you're going to sacrifice speed because you're part of the, you're kind of tapping into that. It's almost like spinning up a test net on Ethereum and using just a couple of nodes. And so can you break down just a little bit of how that kind of plays into it? And is that, that's basically what you're trying to solve with this, saying you're just, but you're going, as opposed to saying, hey, we're going to go horizontally, you're saying, hey, we're going to go take a step back and not only bring the layer one side of what's going on to it, it's also, this is not just about layer ones and smart contracts. This is about Bitcoin. This is about Dogecoin. This is about the other things.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm a big Dogecoin fan. I some people know that, some don't. I was at the very beginning of Dogecoin.
For a second, I did. I don't know how I didn't know that. Like, someone sent me the, like, back in, like, it was like a tweet from, like, I don't know, like when Twitter started, it was like 2014, which is like, you know, crazy. But it was like, who should be the CEO of Dogecoin? And, like, you were on there.
Yeah, I got number two.
It was like, I forget who it was, but yeah, I was like, holy shit, like, Marshall is like number two on there.
Yeah. So that was, rest in peace to Sporklin, was the community manager of Dogecoin from the beginning. And she passed away last year, and she was beautiful soul, beautiful person. If she was here right now, she wouldn't want anyone to be sad, because her whole vibe was just, you know, wow, such amazing, such fun. And she was so cool. She, was always supportive of me, from being an early Dogecoin guy. And so when I started Metal, she, you know, came in and supported. And I also would, you know, frequently check back and hang out with my Doge fam and, you know, talk with the other Dogecoin developers, Dogecoin founders and stuff like that. We've always stayed friendly. Jackson, the one of the founders, there's three Jackson, Billy and Christine. Jackson is out of it. He hates crypto now. That's okay. Everybody changed their mind. Christine's very quiet off the side. And Billy, as many know, is really active on Twitter, out there, you know, with crypto, super awesome guy. Yeah. And so April's really cool. She tweeted this and, you know, very nice to throw me in there. And I got a surprising amount of votes and was like, oh, cool. I think people really love me in the Dogecoin community. And I, I want to come back and you can get back to that community. And that's something I've been talking with the foundation about. One of the things that's cool about Dogecoin, people would say, oh, it's a scam. Was it actually created as a joke? Jackson was like, hey, I want to make a joke. Like, Bitcoin is so ridiculous. I want to make a joke coin. And him and Billy met on Bitcoin Talk and, you know, with a thread, how do I fork Bitcoin or something like that? And so Billy forked Bitcoin. And there was actually a flaw in the code that allowed it to mint endlessly. That wasn't intentional. And they're like, oh, you know, screw it. Just leave it. Whatever. And then people are like, this is the way of Doge. Like, it'll be fine.
Show you the power of community, though, right? Like, totally. That right there is the perfect, like, epitome of, like, hey, there's community around something. It doesn't matter what it is.
That's right.
There's value there because people are finding value in each other. And it's like, that's, like, the difference that, like, I feel like this traditional old guard is just never gonna, it's like, cause it's impossible to unlearn something. Like, you know, John talks about this, like, it's impossible. It's like, you have to acknowledge you're wrong, which is difficult for people. So it's like the smartest person in the room is the person that can acknowledge they're wrong the most and the easiest.
Yeah. And what you just said, you know, the value is in each other. The value of money is just a concept in your mind that allows us to communicate value between each other. But what creates the value is that commerce between each other, how we help each other, how we create small businesses, how we bring value to each other. That's what brings money value. If I get paid with something, if I get paid with dollars, it doesn't matter if I get paid with metal, USD, metal blockchain, Proton, Ethereum, Lunar token, if there's value in that ecosystem, if I find value with Lunar token, if I find value with metal blockchain, then that's great. Then I can sell it to someone else for value, right? If there's value. But if it has no value, and there's no goodness, there's no community where we're exchanging and have this social interaction, then guess what? It will have no value, right? And the markets will dictate that and they will show that. And that's what's so cool and interesting about crypto is that it helps us understand the origins of money, what creates money, why it has value, and all the different ways that value can be created in currency. And a lot of people said, oh, Dogecoin's valueless. And I've always felt that Dogecoin is the value is the education, because I got involved in Bitcoin from the very beginning, from a very early time where it was all nerds. And then it became a lot of VCs and business people. And all of a sudden, the nerds were like the minority. And I was like, I'm losing my interest, because instead of people coming up to me and be like, what do you think about, what do you think about the new Lightning proposal? Or what do you think about, which was, before everybody knew about Lightning, that was at the SF Bitcoin, devs meetup group with Thaddeus Dreija and Joseph Poon. Those guys were presenting. So we were nerding out, talking about these things, Bitcoin, altcoins, different things like that. And then everybody's like, where do you think the price is going? Is it going up or down? Should I sell? Should I buy? And we're like, I don't know. And Dogecoin's like, one Doge equals one Doge. Wow. And everybody's having fun. All of a sudden I see, it was increasingly becoming older crowd. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but the crowd was less interested in the technology and more interested in the financial aspects. And it really kind of sucked the fun out of it, for me at least. And then Dogecoin was this really cool place where all of a sudden, 13, 14 year old kids were showing up. Hey, I built a wallet. Hey, let's talk tech again. And it was fun, where everything had become really not very fun. And Dogecoin launched in December of 2013. That was right about one of the first big run-ups of Bitcoin to about 1,300 in 2013, end of 2013. So it was Dogecoin launched into this kind of bull market. And then as crypto started to sink, Bitcoin fell all the way down to like $150 by 2015. People were very depressed. Going to like a crypto conference was like, hey, how's it going? It's like, good. Oh, I'm dead, and then going to like a Dogecoin event, I helped co-organize an event called Dogecon in San Francisco. The Bitcoin events going on at the time was like misery, like pain. Everybody like, please, does anybody have some alpha? Versus Dogecoin, which was like, wow, such fun. Do you want a taco? Let's go to the dance off, right? And you had Andreas Antonopoulos keynoting. You had Charlie Lee was there. Jesse Powell from Kraken and all the biggest industry leaders. I was there. And we were talking about what inspired us about the industry again. So Dogecoin is a dog on a coin that's friendly, that lets people in with a great community, shows the power of community, and it's about education, and it's very welcoming to young people, and it's not threatening. It doesn't have to have, we don't have to have some crazy token economics to have value in crypto. The reality is that helps, but the true value is each other, what you said. It's the value of community, and without the community, you've got nothing.
Thanks, man.
Well, I'm sorry, it sounded kind of harsh. But
no, I mean, that's without a community, there is no crypto. I mean, we coined that. Yeah. Like, that was what we talked about many years ago. And so I'll start John's question, which I know, and then I can hand off him because I know how he starts questions. So I'm a user. I come in. I want to create this freestanding blockchain using the Metal blockchain. Like, where do I start?
Yeah. So with Metal blockchain, we just announced it. It just started trading. The mainnet of the chain, testnet, are live, and we're about to turn the bridges live. We're working furiously round the clock to get the bridges live. Essentially, the first piece that you would need is to become a validator. So you would need 2,000 Metal staked. It's very similar to Snowman and Avalanche. It was forked from that technology. Although the changes that we're making are bringing web authentication, bringing over other POW chains, as well as bringing adding a new subchain from kind of the traditional Avalanche 3 chains with platform chain, exchange chain, and contract chain. We're adding what we call A chain, which is our payments chain, because we believe that Proton is a great payments layer. So if you wanted to start, all you need is 2,000 Metal staked to become a validator. If you are going to do that, anybody watching this show, contact us, come into our Metal Telegram or community or on Reddit, because we are granting validators. So you probably don't have to buy the 2,000 if you're already validating or have some sort of idea. Come to us, we're making grants. But 2,000 Metal, that turns you into a validator. Once you're a validator, you can deploy your own subchain. I would work with us to work with the Metallicus core team to do that, because we can really help you get that live. We're about to publish all the docs on how to do that. And it's relatively simple. It's actually much easier to launch a token. And so our vision is that by adding the A chain to Metal blockchain and adding a payments layer, we give a great platform for people to start with a subchain inside of Metal blockchain, where you have a great resource for launching a token, where most people will start. And then when you're ready to launch your subchain, you can migrate from the token on A chain to your own subchain. So it's really a lot easier when other people launch a token. And what's happened in the past, I'll give a classic example, like Binance Chain as an ERC20, and then it launches its mainnet Binance Chain, and you have to have some sort of custom migration, app essentially, right, to get people to migrate over to the main chain. In that case, it was Binance's exchange. You deposit some ERC20, get some mainnet chain. But maybe not everybody owns a international exchange, right? Maybe not everybody has all that tech. So going from the Proton A chain, which we're essentially rewriting Proton from C++ into Golang and adding that into Metal, it gives a great solution to become a token, to move from a token to a blockchain. But if you're coming in, you weren't already a token, you do want to just launch a blockchain, essentially 2,000 Metal, some very light hardware, and we're about to publish those specs. Most PCs, most computers would be able to host a Metal node as a validator. And from there, you can essentially just deploy your own chain. And it runs on top of the Metal, aka Snowman Consensus, Metal chain, which is built on Snowman Consensus, which is really great. It gets you down to about 0.5 seconds, which is, Metal, which is a fork of Avalanche. These two layer zeros are the fastest finality in all of crypto. In all of our research, and that's one of the big reasons why we picked it. But a little bit of history and how we got here was, we actually were looking at, EOS.io as this payments layer. We wanted to build layer zero. We started thinking about ways that we could build layer zero into Proton. And we started realizing we're kind of trying to put a square peg into a round hole the wrong way, right? And we also wanted EVM for EOS.io, because EVM is, definitely where majority of smart contract developers are. We got approached by EOS.io core team, great guys, great team. They wanted to work with us together to build the EVM. They brought a bunch of other forks of EOS together under the EOS.io core team and started building the EVM. And just, we were a little confused, because we felt that there was some pretty strict requirements. First of all, it was a pretty big bill to join this, to do the development, which we thought, okay, well, it's kind of weird. We're going to pay a bill and then also put up all our developer time, a big bill. But also, you know what? If this fails, it might be better if somebody was working from a different angle in a different way. So we actually thought putting the EVM into EOS.io didn't make sense. It's kind of like, again, putting the square peg into the round hole. We'd rather put the EOS IO into the snowman, if that makes sense. So rewrite EOS IO in C++, put it into snowman, which is the metal consensus. And from there, other blockchains could communicate with Proton, and Proton gives an incredible platform to launch a chain. So from token, with all of the fiat ramping and digital identity that we have with Proton, moving into building your own chain, we give you the perfect ecosystem. So you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be an exchange to handle the conversion. You don't have to be regulated with your own financial licenses to handle fiat. We can do that for you as Metallicus, and we're bringing on other banks and payment processes onto the network. Really, it's like, I guess, another description is kind of like Google, right? I guess not a lot of people use Google Cloud, so maybe I'll use Amazon in this description with AWS. But we've got everything you need for the technology to get you there, right?
Make that like Google too, Marshall. You're just like firing them down.
Google blockchain people are like putting my face on a target. Yeah.
So if I'm like, obviously you guys have WebAuth and you've got, you know, like Metal, you've got the wallet, you've got a lot going on there. But if I'm like going to create, you know, my own chain and it's EVM compatible, I mean, can I still like have my RPC and put that into MetaMask and utilize, like, if someone's going to launch their own chain, they can see you still use it across EVM wallets?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And so you basically, like, if we made like a Lunar Crush chain right now, right, what would we do? We'd basically take the C chain on Metal blockchain. We'd fork it. We'd deploy it under a Lunar Crush validator, and then you'd have a Lunar Crush EVM chain where you don't have to worry about the consensus. So you don't have to fight for all the validators, or even worse, God forbid, physical proof of work miners. You don't have to worry about any of that. And you would essentially just deploy your chain. It would start from, you know, a Genesis block, and you would have your own Lunar Crush Ethereum, essentially. And you could even very simply and quickly do this by just setting up on the bridge, where you'd have the Lunar token on the bridge. And then you'd have the Lunar blockchain, where Lunar could move from its token one-to-one into a chain with no custom conversion event, airdrop, mirroring, snapshot, any of that stuff that makes it so complicated. You can just start bridging, right? And the vision behind that is that ultimately that the bridging starts happening at the Metal layer and not at the CeFi layer. So in the future, I believe something like Metal blockchain and layer zeros, you're going to see blue chip coins come into Metal chain, into layer zeros, and the competition for that. So Bitcoin talking to Dogecoin, talking to Proton, et cetera, talking to Lunar token, talking to Binance chain, having this communication, it should happen at the Metal chain layer and not at a CeFi bridge layer. So Metallicus has a bridge on protonswap.com and in the Metal Pay app. But in the future, you would just have very similarly, like in Binance or Coinbase, you'd just be able to choose, oh, I want to withdraw USDC onto Proton instead of Ethereum, or Bitcoin onto Proton, right? Which initially can come over the form of a wrapped token, whether it's through a Coinbase bridge or a Metallicus bridge. But once it goes into its own chain, then it really doesn't need that centralized aspect to the bridging anymore. And I believe that that really is the future. Let the CeFi entities handle that movement of cross-chain movement. And when it comes to truly moving between chains, and once you're into a layer zero, just let that one chain handle it. Everybody else get out of the way. No compliance holds, no, not that we don't want compliance, but you know, we don't want the centralized party mucking about in our cross-chain transfers. We don't want delays, we don't want stops, we don't want insolvency, we don't want any of that. And that's what comes with the CeFi bridges, right? And so we wanna do away with that. And we wanna say, once you're in the layer zero, once you're inside of Metal, you just work at the chain level. And so for like a Lunar blockchain, Lunar token converting into the Lunar blockchain, that could be done in a week, and it could be done very fast, and you could have your own chain, and Lunar token is the gas, right? And if you want to move off the gas, we have another subchain that's connected to you. Just press a button, no gas, right? In fact, if you wanted to clone the A chain of Proton and make your own version of it, you could do that too with a no gas model as well. And so we're going to bring more chains over, starting with the dinosaurs, right? But hey, dinosaurs are cool, man. Let's put some robotic elements onto these dinosaurs. That would make me excited. I don't know. that's a good analogy, but yeah, Bitcoin needs an upgrade.
This is a really interesting discussion. You know, it's funny. It's like in crypto, everything moves so fast, and for the last several years, we've looked at it as almost like there's these layer ones. Which one are you building on? Oh, you must be building a token on that layer one. It's like, that's it. And a lot of what's been built is very like, you know, rudimentary. There, you know, 9,700 DeFi platforms that all do the same thing on a different chain. Like NFT projects that have 60 holders, you know, like you look and they all look the same. You know, you just see kind of this, I guess, evolution of where crypto has started and kind of where it's gone to. And now we're getting to this place of like real, we'll call them like mission critical or business applications. You reference banks, you know, and it's like, I assume that like a bank on Meta would have their bank chain and they would interoperate as necessary in a regulatory manner. But it's sort of like, you know, when I look at, say, let's take like a Gmail, right? Let's say Gmail could tokenize itself. Is this, you know, that would require just absolutely mind-blowing scale that has never, ever occurred in crypto. What would something like a Gmail do if they wanted to build on a chain? What do you think they would do?
So I think, you know, and I said this, there's a video from 2016 where it's like me hiking through the woods and I'm talking about the future of crypto. And it's scary because in the video, I literally predicted like all these things that are happening, right? And I say every company, every corporation will have its own blockchain. People will have their own social tokens that represent them and their brand. And sure enough, right, that's happening with NFTs. It's happening with corporate blockchains and some of the early corporate blockchains like the Clayton blockchain, right, connected to KakaoTalk, kind of like the WeChat of Korea. So there's like an early corporate blockchain we see right there, right? Salesforce has their own blockchain. Not many people know about this, but they have a Salesforce blockchain in the background, just quietly, just lurking out there, a whale in the ocean. You know, make no mistake, every top, you know, 10, top 50 tech company has a blockchain. They have one. You just haven't seen it yet. And whether it's their final form blockchain or it's a JP Morgan, Quorum, then turned Obsidian, then termed whatever, and they'll keep shifting. They're going to keep experimenting and they're watching people like me and they're watching blockchains like Metal blockchain because they're like, that's what we want to emulate. But at the end of the day, I think also that you're going to see these blockchains appear. They're going to have different purposes and reasons for existing. I think many larger tech corporations and banks will ultimately do their own experimentation. But at the end of the day, they're going to do what everybody else does, which is follow the trend. And if the trend is EVM, they're going to follow EVM. If the trend is to put everything into one L0 and everybody's hopping onto the Metal blockchain L0, they're going to go into the L0. They're going to go where the liquidity is, the people are, but they're going to see to what extent could I go out and do this on my own and could I be a leader of blockchain. But some of them are going to YOLO a little too hard. Some of them are going to Zuckerberg it and go DM new blockchain crazy stuff. And then they just get destroyed by regulators, Congress, competition, and then Salesforce, you know, quietly building the background. And then a Kakao in a society in Korea where crypto is so much more ingrained in the day-to-day and people are just a little bit more aware of it than some other countries. You know, it makes sense, right? It's like, oh, Kakao has a chain, right? The Clayton chain. So that makes sense. But still, it's so early to determine any of that stuff. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see a lot of experimentation and a lot of big press releases. And you're going to see Goldman Sachs on the front of their website. I think it still says this, you know, Goldman Sachs entering the metaverse. They're not in the metaverse. They're not doing anything in the metaverse, but they're trying to, you know, be cool and stay with it. Right. And that's what most of the big brands are going to do. When it comes to the banks, a lot of times, and this is a little bit different animal from the cybersecurity perspective, they may only want to have their own kind of version of their own decentralized ledger. So they just don't want anything else to touch their chain, right? And so with banks, you may see a lot of these private bank chains spinning up. And that's a big bet of ours with the layer zero, is that if we can build a layer zero that financial institutions are comfortable with, that they are going to spin up their own chains. They don't want a Bank of America token. They want a Bank of America chain, you know, the big newsflash. And they want to really have tight control of it, but they also do want the interoperability. So where we find that really good balance, that's the place to be. And I don't know any other blockchain core team working on the compliance and reg tech like Metallicus is. You know, when we started with the decentralized identity path, there are a few startups doing decentralized identity, few and far between. Got a lot of crypto anarchist people, which I totally empathize with, you know, the centralized vision, but telling us, you know, how dare you put my identity on the chain? Well, what if I want it on the chain? What if I don't want to type out my information every time I sign up to a new crypto exchange and hold up a piece of paper next to me? What if I don't want to do any of that stuff? What if I don't mind that I know they're going to have the data anyways, and I'd rather have a more secure option that remotely I can delete my information off their server with a button versus hold up a piece of paper and send them some file that they hold in perpetuity? So, you know, that vision of compliance and reg tech, I think, is what banks want. Having their own chain is what they want. Look at Signature, Signet. You know, there's a lot of interest in having your own chain from the corporate side. And also, I see a lot of really cool chains like Dogecoin that just need smart contracts. But due to all of the political nature of kind of how crypto can get over time as it gets larger, it may be harder to say, hey, everybody, let's take the core Dogecoin code and make it do proof of stake versus here's a proof of stake Dogecoin that's one-to-one, right, with smart contracts where people just go, ooh, I'll just do that, right? People don't really care how the sausage is made. They just care that it tastes good. They care that the car drives fast. I don't care to take apart the engine. I just want to plug my Tesla in and go into ludicrous mode every now and then. I don't know how all the software works, and that's okay as long as it's safe, right? So that's the vision. And I think that right now we're in a token world. 2017 was a token world, ERC-20 and assets on top of chains. And give it 12 months, my next big prediction is that everyone will want to have a blockchain, but who will be able to really provide them with it? And renting space, unaffordable ways to do it, it's not gonna happen that way. And it needs to be just as easy to create a token as it is to create a coin. And that's the vision of MetalChain.
Amazing, man. Thank you so much for this. John, you got anything else? We've held them over an hour.
Only one thing. I mean, you know, projects are only as good as the people behind them. And obviously Marshall's amazing, but you know, we saw that you tweeted out recently, you got some of your advisory board, which is pretty impressive. You got someone from the Federal Reserve, the OCC, Citigroup, BNY Mellon, Naval Intelligence Officer. Tell us more about that. How did that happen? And what was the strategy behind that?
Thanks. Yeah, we're so thankful for all of our advisory board members. And just like, we have an amazing team at Metallicus. Everybody will say that about their team, but I'm just gushing. You know, we got an amazing team, a ton of passion, a bunch of really great people. We want to build a global crypto bank. And so when I started, you know, writing articles about regulation, tweets and things like that, it didn't initially strike the crypto community like maybe I would have liked it to, because a lot of people said, you know, how dare you? But there were people out there in the traditional banking world, in the regulatory sector, that said, wow, this guy really gets it. I get crypto and I work in the government. I get crypto and I work in banking. And I want to be a part of that because that's the future, right? It's not about one of these. It's not that blockchain's not going away. Banking's not going away. They're going to do this, right? And anybody who works in either of these industries that's really deep in it and really has done their research knows that. And so that attracted this talent, ex-regulators, ex-bankers, ex-naval intelligence and things like that. This really excited them because in the past, there wasn't that blend. It was really kind of only pure crypto. And so to say that crypto and banking will align and will be, you know, a great success for America, it attracted what I believe to be an exceptional, amazingly talented group of individuals with decades of experience in their field. And I'm just honored to have them on my team and advisory board. As we go to build a bank, this is the experience that you need. And also, I believe that this is the experience that you need to build a blockchain in 2030. This is the experience that you need to build a blockchain, successful cryptocurrency products in 2025. We don't just think about, you know, what's hot right now and, we just want to have products like everyone else or a clone of other people's products. We build into the future where we say, this is where crypto is going to look like. This is what it's going to look like in 8 years from now, 7 years from now, 5 years from now. And that's really like 50, 70, 80 years in like normal human time. So we really have to think from a technology perspective, like so far into the future. And I love that because it's so sci-fi. And I think, you know, as we are really truthful with ourselves about it and the community about it, it attracts the right talent from the crypto side, from the banking side. And so, and I'm really excited there are even more really awesome people joining our advisory board and our team that I'm really excited to announce. And it just keeps getting better and better. And I feel like you put out this good energy, you put out this certain vibe, you put out the passion and spirit of crypto, and it will come back to you. And if you take from the community and you do bad things, you are 100% going to get your just desserts because it's all public. It's all there forever. So, you know, this goodness keeps amplifying and this dark element just becomes more and more visible on both sides. And, you know, it's great that we're kind of starting and ending with that, you know, the piece about BlackRock and government, because I do believe in America. I do believe I'm a big patriot. I'm a big believer in what this country can do and the freedoms of this country. And I want to take us to the moon. You know, not talking about prices. I'm talking about vision for our country for the future. Let's do it because we absolutely can. And we're in charge. And you know, a lot of countries where the technology is really growing faster in blockchain, they're very scary countries. We can do a much better job. So I wanted to leave on that note. You know, community, don't be afraid of government. Work together with government. Find the people in government that really believe in crypto, and let's do it together. And it's going to happen. Anybody saying that we don't have a shot is lying or has some sort of agenda. And I'm always going to come out and say it like it is. Like I said earlier, you know, when it comes to Washington and crypto, we just have to give them the right information. And I'm so happy to have this advisory board that gets that and understands that, because it really, really helps us in our mission too.
Marshall, you're the man. Super inspiring. Thank you so much for coming on.
You guys, appreciate it. Amen.
You're the best. John, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you everyone for listening. Episode 115 of Lunar Crush Live. Marshall, we'll chat with you backstage, my man. Thank you so much.